This is part two of a two-part podcast.
Put Paul's brain on your plot. Do you have a hunk of land but don't know where to start? Do you have a world-changing permaculture idea and you need some feedback? Do you feel like the guy in overalls may inexplicably hold the keys to all your wildest permaculture and homesteading dreams? Well, you're probably wrong. But if you want to give it a go anyway, you can hire Paul for a consultation. He will be all yours for a whole entire hour. Schedule your Paulversation today at permies.com/consult. permies.com/consult.
So another big one with a pebble style rocket mass heater is that we've done this a few times where it's like I know that, for example, when I did the demonstration at Karas Park in Missoula in 2010, we had a pebble style rocket mass heater all set up and running in a warehouse, and we took it apart and we loaded it up on trailers in less than an hour. And then when we got to Karas Park, we built the whole thing in an hour and 10 minutes. So the thing is that I kind of feel like if you are in a temporary space and you want to take your rocket mass heater with you, a pebble style travels with you really well. You could load it up onto a pickup in about an hour, and then when you get to your new site, you can set it back up again in probably a little more than an hour. So it's really delightful that way. It's plausible that if somebody is renting, this could be an option, whereas Cobb might not be an option. So there is some lovely, delightful things. Now, innovation. We tried an experiment on this one. Does anybody want to talk about the experimental Cobb patch in this? Anybody? I'll do it if you want. Okay, so.
Was there an air leak?
No.
Idea. My memory is poor.
I can take this, Paul. Okay. So Peter was talking about the issue being that with gravel, you've got these air spaces, and you don't have continuous contact also with the barrel. So at startup, it's kind of insulated in one sense. And so more of the heat goes to moving the air up and out the chimney and creating better draw. Once it hits a certain point, it radiates a little bit better. And then the pebbles start to absorb it. So, well, what did we want to do? We wanted to improve the efficiency of the heat transfer from the barrel to essentially keep it as cool as possible in there. And so what we did is on the upper half of the barrel, not the lower half, just the upper half, which is the hotter part of it, we made up a bunch of Cobb and then plastered, as it were, these rocks onto the barrel. So there's a layer of Cobb underneath that rock and then slap that rock on. So there's a coating, a solid-ish coating of Cobb and rock on the top half of the barrels to improve the heat transfer.
So the key is, the reason why Cobb is more efficient is because it's using conductive heat, which is the most efficient form of heat, whereas convective heat is the least efficient form of heat. And a pebble style uses convective heat to heat everything.
Well, it uses a bit of both, right? Because, I mean, where it's touching the barrel, it's got sure. conductive, but then it's got a lot of air gaps. And so, yeah, that way we could remove the air gaps and get rid of the convection part of it.
So, and where a pebble or a rock touches the barrel, that is conductive heat, but there's not a lot of touchy going on right there. Whereas once you introduce the Cobb, now there's a lot of touchy going on. And so a lot more conductive heat. So the pebble style system has a bunch of holes along the bottom of the bench so air can come into the bench. And then the stratification chamber will heat the gases surrounding the barrels in there that's surrounding the stratification chamber. So basically heat comes off and goes into the pebbles and the rocks and things like that. And then it has to move through. If it can't move through, then it just becomes insulative rather than being a heat transfer scenario. So what you guys did is that you put a bunch of cob on the top of the barrel and kind of glued a bunch of rocks on there with the cob. Ah, what a great photo. You kind of see it happening right there. And then on the sides, you left it as pebbles so that the air can continue to move up the sides in the convective way that is necessary in order for that part to work. So the idea is to make something that's a little bit of a hybrid system, possibly a little more efficient. It's a small thing. Will it be a big deal? Not sure, but you know, we just got to try. And at the same time, one of the other builds, they did that too. And so, because they believed in it. I mean, Mud was here. Mud thinks it's a good idea also. I think it's probably going to be slightly more efficient. Maybe I think it's debatable whether it's worth the extra effort because, of course, cob, anything you do with cob is slow. And so it's kind of like, and of course, once the cob dries, it becomes like a big ass rock. And it's like, if we want to make changes, it's not going to be as easy to make changes. So.
Can I add one thing, Paul?
Yes.
And I think the other benefit of this test is the conversation's kind of like, you know, I think I remember reading in Erica and Ernie's book, it's the, you know, if you don't use the heat, it's useless to have, you know what I mean? And so the conversation is if we have cob below it or around it, that's not getting directly, you know, if somebody's not sitting on that, then how useful is that to you? Whereas if you have cob on the top that you might, may or may not sit on, in this situation, it's a little tall, but then you also have that convective airflow, hopefully, then you're getting more use out of that, right?
I would have to say that the big thing is, I think that the big thing that we added with this cob is we absorbed more heat, and it's a type of heat absorption that will last longer than the pebbles. The pebbles are going to hold heat, but they're going to give it off fairly quickly. The big rocks that are in there with the pebbles are going to hold it for a while, but then they don't absorb as much because they're getting heated with convective heat instead of getting heated with conductive heat. So I think that what we're doing is we're making this system that'll hold heat longer and it'll harvest more. Now, I think that the big thing with this whole experiment, that for this whole project, I mean, first of all, it's like this whole system needed an upgrade. It was an early prototype of a pebble-style rocket mass heater. And it's like, okay, some of these experiments we're all done with. Let's clear those out and put them away and get them out of here. They're not doing us any good. We have new experiments we want to try. And I think that the big thing that this project, this particular build was all about was how do we have even more efficiency when there is no fire? So the fire is done and now we want the system to become passively more efficient for the next day when there's no fire during that period. And I think that this is an area for which there hasn't been enough new innovation for rocket mass heater stuff. I think I could be wrong. I'm excited about it. I don't know if I'm onto something good or onto something stupid. But we did it. You guys did it. You guys did the work. The experiment is happening. And so far I think that the results are good. We got, you know, it does seem like the system is working more efficiently, and when we run the fire, it seems to have a stronger draw. Now, any more comments about the build? Is there any other little bits and bobs that I've left out? I know that during the build, in order to be able to get the kiss the barrel to happen, that the shippable core was moved closer to the mass, about, I think, 6 or 7 inches. And so I'm the guy that built that shippable core, and it took 4 of us to move it into the building and place it there. And I got to tell you, for 4 of us, it was a grunt fest. It was, that is heavy. It's like, we called it a shippable core, but it's like, more like freightable core. It's like, I don't think you want to ever ship that. That's going to be very expensive to ship. And you're going to need a forklift to get it on the truck, I think. So, but it was heavy. You guys moved it like 6 or 7 inches. Any other comments about the build before we just turn this over to Peter for his commentary about what we did?
Yeah, so we added a metal sheet between the wooden box and the stratification chamber barrel. And then we also had a clean out at the back of the box. Not sure how to describe that more, but near the exterior door.
Okay.
There we go.
Yep, there it is.
There you go.
There it is.
Okay. With a door to access it.
So it's low in the barrel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, it's low. Good.
So that way you can get to whatever chunky bits are laying in the bottom of the barrel.
That's right.
Yeah. So, along those lines, when you guys were taking out the ducting that was in there, so this thing had been run for 9 years, and even though there were clean-out ducts on that end for all of this stuff, I don't think anybody ever went in and actually cleaned it out. How bad was it, and what was in there?
I don't recall there being that much stuff in there. I think there was a little bit of fly ash in there, but I have no strong memories of being like, oh my God, this thing's blocked. It was just like, there's stuff in here. What do you know? You know, guess what? A fire's been burning. It made ash. Some of it got in here. Okay. And we went on. It was quite clean, I think.
Elliot was right on the money there. I agree with that.
I can tune in as well.
All right.
I've been using for over a year now.
Okay, so Steven's trying to say stuff, but Steven, there's something wrong with your microphone. We can't really understand anything you're saying.
Sorry, Steven.
Okay, while Steven looks at his stuff I want to...
Check.
Oh,
yeah.
Now we can hear you.
All right. The thing I wanted to say is that I've been using this rocket heater for over a year now, and I have yet to see any kind of drop in efficiency, which would clue me in that we need to clean out from that exhaust. So I don't think there's been too much of a problem with stuff collecting inside of that exhaust. So as far as I can tell, you know, based on my anecdotal experience, there's been very little buildup of residue, ash, cinder, grease, coat, or anything inside this particular heater. I don't think we have to worry about that right now.
It seems like about once a year in the past we've popped off the barrel, and then we would vacuum around the riser and kind of shove the vacuum hose into the manifold a little bit. And that was about it. And while there would be a fair bit of ash there, it wasn't like something like a bizarre amount or anything. But there was some. But
yeah.
It might be about time to do it.
I recall when we were trying to get the stratification chamber barrel to sit on the manifold because it was wet cob, we were getting trace smoke trails. And so we had to kind of create a little bit of the silt inside to like seal the interior of the chamber.
Okay.
So I think we've said everything we can about what we did and what we observed and why we did it and the design. And Peter's over there. I can see him taking notes. He's writing down all the things he needs to say.
Yay.
All right. All right, Peter. Let us have it. What do you think of all this stuff we did?
Okay. The input in the strut barrels. Stratification is a long word. I call it strut barrels. Where's it situated? Is it in the bottom, in the top, or where is it? I can see it now.
It's at the bottom. It goes in low
in the bottom.
And it's an 8-inch duct that goes to the far end of the strat barrel.
Okay, yes. And then the pipe, the 6-inch exhaust pipe is going in to the barrel, to the top.
I think it's about, I'm going to guess at the moment, about 6 inches from the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, but then there, the 8-inch pipe is there as well.
Yeah.
There, and side by side.
Yeah.
Side by side then.
Okay. I have 3 inches at the deeper part of the straw.
Okay. Oh, I call the plunger pipe and you the straw.
I call it the juice box straw.
Juice box straw.
Yeah.
I know what's meant for this.
Yeah,
here in the United States, so, when we say plunger, we get this whole other vision of something which doesn't fit.
Doesn't sound good.
Other people has other terminology. So, let's say, and the straw is down there with 6 inch or 5 inch, but it's hollow there, so you can't. It's not flat.
Right.
The bottom of the strut barrels.
I guess like 45 degree angle.
And it's going there like this.
So it used to be. Yeah. I think it originally was a 45 degree angle with the barrel like this.
Yeah.
And then I think we switched it around so that way it was more open. To pulling it.
Oh, wait a minute. It's not a straight pipe, but a 45 degree angle on the elbow.
I think so.
Okay.
No, the pipe is straight. We're referring to the bottom. It's not cut at a 90 degree. Originally it was cut at an angle to match the contour of the barrel, but then they rotated it.
Oh, that's good. So the entrance of the pipe is larger than 6 inch. Yes?
Yes.
That's
definitely
good. I was thinking maybe when you have a straight piece of pipe straw down to the bottom of the barrel, it might be too small and you need, let's say a reducer to 8 inch, so it's a wider perimeter, so the air can go easier under it from all around. But you don't need it now because the pipe is cut in the 45 degrees, and it's open to the rest of the barrel.
Yes.
Good. The chimney temperature, is that monitored in the library? Do you know what chimney temperature is in the core of the chimney pipe when it's running?
We were just getting the surface temperature of the exhaust.
Which is
the surface
wall.
Temperature.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the wall of the pipe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I usually add 30 degrees in.
Yeah, that's sometimes that's correct and sometimes it's not.
Right.
But let's say that's correct in a couple of situations. Then the core in order to understand how its gases, hot gases, behave in a vertical duct. In the center, there's a the pipe is this wide, and in the center is a hot, fast streaming core, and in built in layers. It's vertical, but I have to show it like this. It's built in layers. Every layer is lower in temperature and slower in velocity.
So laminar flow, right?
The laminar flow, it goes right up. And the closer to the wall, the slower it gets. And the last tenth of a millimeter, it's effectively at standstill. This is called the boundary layer. A smaller pipe, the boundary layer is earlier and closer to the fast streaming core. And with a wider pipe, it's larger but farther away from the core of the pipe. So this is how it works.
This is a big reason why we went with the smaller vertical exhaust.
Yeah.
Is for exactly the thing that you're describing. And, yeah. And it's like, okay, when those gases are hot, then they will, you know, they'll draw faster than if they're cold. And once they're cold, it plugs kind of sort of a little bit, not really, but kind of sort of a little bit. And so,
friction.
But we want it to draw even stronger when there's a fire. And so that's the whole kiss the barrel idea, is to get those gases in there hotter during the fire.
That works, but what you did, actually, what got the most bang for your buck is eliminating friction. So the top gap above the riser is larger, so there is less friction to go the 180 degrees change direction. The stretch barrels has less friction than a double banded pipe. So in the barrels itself, the gas velocity goes down and more heat tend to go up in those barrels. So that's the efficiency of such a system. Then the plunger pipe I was talking about plunger pipe.
Straw. The straw?
Straw. Straw.
The juice box is straw.
Straw. Okay.
That's great.
The straw pipe. I was worried about the bottom gap, but there is actually no bottom gap. And by cutting it in the 5 to 5 degrees, is even better. So
there is a gap there from the bottom of the straw, so the lowest point of the straw, there is a 3-inch gap. Initially,
but
it was lower.
The rest is 45 degrees.
Yeah.
And open.
Yeah.
Nothing in front of it. Yeah. Correct?
That's correct. And, Peter, we did fiddle with that. We played a little bit because when we first tried having the 45 facing the side of the barrel, that seemed to be too restrictive, on the flow. And so then we just tried rotating it, 90 degrees so that it faced the end of the barrel and thus the source of the exhaust. And that was better, but and help me out here, Isaac and Alex. I think that the problem we found was that it wasn't starting well. And we, by raising it up that 3 inches, it started better. I don't know that it made any real difference to the draw once it was going, but that was a concession to making it faster at the start time.
Maybe when you're, it was first facing the wall of the barrel. When you turned it around 180 degrees, it would be better even, because it's free air there. Where the air is coming from is not important.
Right. It's just that's the way it ended up, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
And we did try to convince Paul that what we should do is have an adjustable straw that we could low up and down. So you could raise it up for starting and then lower it down. But then Paul said.
No. human errors. No. Paul was right about that. Really, human error.
Somebody note this timestamp so I can replay that back 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, okay. You like to hear that, yes? All the system I built, I never had a bypass. I never have a chimney guillotine or whatever. And because such a system, the higher the stratification chamber and the lower the exhaust, the more heat stays up, logically. Actually, high and narrow works actually the best. Not easily done, but it works actually best because a larger part is higher above the exhaust. But okay. Outdoor air. Oh, about changing from 8-inch to 4-inch. That's not. That's about a quarter. So the 4-inch is in cross-section area a quarter of the 8-inch. So that's much. Much too far. The 6-inch is a little bit more than half the 8-inch in cross-section area. So, actually, you are lucky it works. I would say a 7-inch, but probably not easy to come by.
Let me remind you of a conversation that we had several years ago when you were last here. And that is,
what year was that?
Oh boy. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
2017 maybe. Okay.
What, yeah.
We were sitting inside the Fisher Price house, you and I proposed the idea of a 4-inch vertical exhaust for this 8-inch rocket mass heater, which is actually, the wood feed on it has shrunk down so much that it's actually more like a 6-inch wood feed. But the one thing I said is that if we were, burning a 4-inch batch box, the amount of exhaust gases that would be coming out of that would be about the same as what's in an 8-inch J-tube.
No. 6-inch.
Well, it's going to burn...
A 4-inch is about half a 6-inch.
So,
and what I found out during the years that a batch box, according to the Batch Rocket website, is about twice as powerful as a J-tube of the same diameter. More or less, give or take, whatever.
But you would burn 4 times more wood at once.
Yeah, but it's the output of this is because it's done in a batch, you need a larger stratification chamber to extract enough heat.
Right. Yeah.
Because it has a much higher burn rate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as long as you for every pound you have the same efficiency, and I know it has, then the overall efficiency is only different when the chimney temperature is higher. That's the same burning, combustion efficiency is the same burning efficiency pound for pound. You can't do anything about it. It's numbers. Right. That's all.
I think that the big thing is that, with 4-inch vertical exhaust, we were just bumping up on far too much laminar flow. We just couldn't, our exhaust temperatures were not hot enough to be able to work with a 4-inch vertical exhaust. If our exhaust temperatures were like 300 degrees, a 4-inch vertical exhaust would be fine. But when we're trying to keep our exhaust temperatures under 160, then it's like it just got, there's just too much laminar flow. And so in the end, we're doing pretty good with a 6-inch system where we do kiss the barrel. That's been my experience so far, and it sounds like you're agreeing with this.
Depends on what the temperature in that 6-inch pipe would be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Of course.
All right. But I think what we measure the outside, we're seeing temperatures of about 120 to 140, and which is probably a fair bit warmer than that on the inside. But you know, that's going to be the laminar temperature too. And that's like, that's still pretty good, especially if the temperature outside is hovering around freezing. Then we're going to have a nice strong draw, which is another thing too. I don't know if you saw the Free Heat movie or the YouTube videos that we put out about it, especially the one about cold plugs.
Most of them.
So the cold plug thing, to me, it's been a big, big, big thing, because so often we make these systems to work really well in a house, and then we are like all angry when they work so poorly in a cabin or a shop or in a teepee or something like that. So we have now found that if we hang a sign next to it to talk about cold plug and how to mitigate a cold plug, suddenly the whole system works 10 times better just by hanging a piece of paper next to it.
There's something other with that. What I did here in our house, the heater is behind me, is just a cupboard made of concrete. Actually, heat-resistant concrete. But okay.
So you could open it up and get a little fire going in it.
Yeah. It's about 2 feet width inside, square, and as high as a full-grown man. 1.8 yards, and it's better to do it in yards. why don't you do that? But the exhaust is down low on one side, with a trumpet-like entrance to the chimney pipe. So actually, the inside is 8-inch, and it goes down in the thickness of that wall to 6-inch. The thing is, what is it? 2 metric tons about. That's about 2.5 US tons. And it's virtually frictionless. So you start it up and it goes, cold or not. And what you have done, you have eliminating friction in the system you have. But probably there are somewhere pipes in there is not very good. Actually, what you would think over the opening between the strut chamber and the barrel, the vertical barrel, should be not a pipe, but as wide as you can. Much, much wider. Because there's a pipe there. It needs to go all through the pipe, through the pipe to the end, and then it goes free in the stretch chamber. So leave the pipe out, leave that out, leave that out, and make it wide. That is what try to advocate.
Hi, this is Mark. There are a lot of reasons to get angry these days, but I prefer to focus on the positive things that we each can do to make this world a better place. The book Building a Better World in Your Backyard, Instead of Being Angry at Bad Guys, is a great resource for just that. Instead of throwing my arms up in frustration at governments or big corporations, there's a list of ideas that we each can tackle to affect change. Information about this book and other resources can be found at permies.com.
I think that making it wide at that point is good to have a stronger draw.
Better startup.
And then there's the whole concept of being able to prime the vertical exhaust, which is what I think you're describing, to be able to get fire going in that vertical exhaust.
It's even stronger than that. The pipe behind, at the side of my heater here, is about 2 feet away from the side of the heater. So the pipe won't heat up at all, not kissing the wall of the heater at all. But it goes anyway. So what I say is, when you make it, the whole system, frictionless, then you've got a better draw just from the start. You don't have to kiss the barrel or whatever. But it's a way to eliminate, kissing the barrel is a way to eliminate possible friction points in the rest of the system. That's a good thing, yes.
Well,
it can't be without.
And I'm trying to do something that is very, very different from that. And I've got my crazy reasons. And my crazy goes like this. This is the thing where I want to take advantage of the laminar flow issue. When the fire is not burning, I want the air to not go up the exhaust. I want it to plug. I want it to plug as, it won't plug completely. I'll never get it entirely, but I'll get a little bit. And then with that little bit comes a little bit more efficiency. And so the thing that we are attempting to do with this experiment is how to make the whole system more efficient when there is not a fire. And that means that more of the heat from the mass goes into the room rather than up the exhaust. Because if that exhaust is frictionless as you describe it, then a bunch of heat that's in my mass wants to go up the exhaust and outside instead of
no.
Warming me.
No.
No.
Just no. Because it's a stratification chamber. The stratification chamber is what it's doing, what it says it's doing. It traps the hot air in the top of the chamber.
Yes.
And that's it. That's a passive chimney valve.
It is.
Shut off valve or guillotine or whatever.
You are correct, sir. I agree with your analysis 100%. I just want to add one thing to what you just said.
Yeah.
While everything you said is true, it's not perfectly true.
I just wanted to make a note that it was true, but now not perfectly.
So it'll plug, but the plug that it does is pluggish. And so then there's also a similar plug happening over the riser, right? You know, and so there's a little bit of plug there, which is also plug-ish. It's not a perfect plug.
No.
And the stratification chamber is not a perfect plug. Mm. And this smaller vertical exhaust plugs, but it's not a perfect plug either. Mm. And so the idea is we're going to add all these up to a pretty damn good plug, whereas what we had before was just a good plug.
Yeah. I can see the reason for it, and I see that the whole of the system is now as good as it gets without other radical modifications. I think so. So you can probably get 1 or 2% or maybe 5 or something more, and that's about it. Do you want to do that? What I would say is, if the numbers are you are mentioned are right for the vertical exhaust, then you have a very good efficiency, overall efficiency, probably somewhere around 90%, which is very high.
Yeah, yeah. So your strategy of having a much taller stratification chamber, that makes great sense. You'll have a better plug that way too. However, the heat that you're giving off is going to be closer to the ceiling, which isn't so great.
Wait a minute. That's with a barrel. But the thing behind me is not a barrel. There's no metal in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No.
Except for the door. It's all masonry.
So,
which means in four or five hours after being fired, the whole of the thing is about the same temperature. From top to bottom, 10 degrees or something.
Trying to focus on the build that we just did, that we're talking about here. And granted, there are other designs that one could do. And speaking of which, I wonder if Andreas, if you could pull up that picture of the Cobb hat. I'm excited. So Peter, you built, if we're going to talk about a different design, you built the Minnie Mouse that's up inside the Love Shack. We've had some people using that, and it's been delightful. And we've been kind of thinking like we'd like it to be warmer in the morning. And so, of course, the mass that's inside of Minnie Mouse is pretty minimal.
It is.
And so it's kind of like, okay, how could we add more mass? We have a lot of ideas. But, and I'm hoping Andreas will put a picture of it up here really soon.
I've seen the YouTube video.
Well, we are just now starting to put together a YouTube video about the Cobb, what we call it, the Cobb hat. And
Mud hat one.
And so there's I think Stephen has put up some pictures on Permies, but for the most part what it is that we have a 14-inch thick Cobb blob that hovers over. There it is.
Yep.
Hovers over the barrel. So we don't want the Cobb to touch the top of the barrel because that could lead to the barrel possibly spalling.
Yep.
We don't want that. So this is basically attempting to harvest the radiant heat coming off of the top of the barrel to put it into the Cobb hat. So that Cobb hat is 14 inches thick. And this is an experiment. Oh, and the opening, I believe, is designed to facilitate any pizzas or pies or cookies that might need baking. Kind of a second purpose. But really, it's like the idea is that the heat that gets in there can come out the front. And we don't want it to get too hot. So we got to keep that open. But at the same time, rather than trying to heat a mass to, say, 110 degrees Fahrenheit, is like, what if we could heat it up to about 250 or 300 degrees Fahrenheit? And then it'll hold that heat longer. So I believe Stephen is about to do some fresh tests with this, but we've modified it a bit, and I think it's now ready for the full testing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we had some people that were staying there, and when they would report the numbers of, like, I'm going to bed and it's 85, and in the morning it's 60, and I'm kind of thinking that's too cold. I would rather that they go to bed and it's 75 and they wake up and it's 65. I think that would be better. And so we're trying to find ways to add a mass. Now, we've got some other ideas about other masses to add and things of that nature, but this is our first, we're the most excited about this design. And, we're so excited about this, we might just start sticking this on everything. Because it's like, why heat the ceiling? Nobody's up there. And then you get, like, the ceiling will get to be like 200 degrees because it's harvesting all that radiant heat. And then you just end up melting the snow on the roof and in this one spot. And it's like, that's not doing us any good. But adding a Cobb hat onto everything, onto every rocket mass heater would give it a much longer, burn. Although we have made something similar for the bun warmer outside, but that's just so that we can make pizzas.
Wow.
All right. Let's look towards possibly, going to some questions and wrapping this up. But I want to make sure, Peter, do you have anything else to say about this build in the library, this stuff that we did in the library?
Most of the boxes are ticked.
Okay.
The friction, elimination of the friction is the most important, in my opinion, of course. The top cap above the riser could be more than 4 inches, but okay. There is a little formula, how to, calculate that. Let's say it's an imaginary ring above the riser, and the surface area,
the cross sectional area,
the surface area of that ring should be ideally twice the cross section area of the riser.
Oh, okay. Because I think at an inch and a half, it is the cross-sectional area. So 3 inches would be the minimum.
That would be the minimum, yes.
Yeah. And fascinating. I know we're going for a bigger gap these days, yeah. Because having a nice strong draw really makes a rocket mass heater, you know, delightful.
Yeah.
Cool. How about this? Okay, do you have any other notes about this build?
This is there were a couple of questions. There's one more. Two more. The rocks on, in Cop Lasagna, is a very good strategy to extract more heat by conduction. You're right about it. You note that down and, and there is a little warning. Fly ash in the ash in the strat barrels will be probably more than fly ash in the pipes. I explain. Fly ash is fairly light ash, and it will be actually behaving as a gas. So when you have pipes, even wider pipes, the fly ash will carry all the way to the chimney and goes out. Now you have a smaller chimney. The reasons have been discussed, okay. There is no pipe anymore. There is a big stratification chamber. In the stratification chamber, the forward velocity of gases goes down until the point, up to the point where the fly ash will sink down there. So you have to be aware there will be probably more fly ash, which doesn't carry out to outside, but stays in the barrels. Okay?
That's good to know. That makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense.
Good.
Okay. So are we ready to go on to Q&A? I'm not sure if people have been like watching all of the comments. I've seen some with bright colors. I think that people have paid little monies to get some. Let's see. It says, I see a thing on the screen. It says, I really hope you'll live stream the recording of the Rich Soil podcast to your YouTube channel. So that way there can also be audience interaction. Isn't that what we're doing right now? I think this whole thing that we're doing is on YouTube live right now. And I think it's on some other things live. I don't know what else.
I think that's a vote of confidence. He likes this. He's like, do this.
Okay.
He gave you monies to say how much he liked it.
So I hope you'll rename Skip to Bypass. And then it's an acronym. The name Skip scares people off. Maybe. I don't know. I've gotten to where I really like Skip. I mean, it used to be Pep, but then it grew and grew and grew. And now Peter's looking confused. Peter, you're probably not familiar with the Skip stuff that we've done. Yeah, okay. So, I'll keep it in mind. But I think, I think step one is to have all of the Skip stuff get to be, 1,000 times more interest of folks. And then we can talk. Mark, is this, I see, you know, there's a Mark in our group here, and then there's the Mark. I think it's our Mark. But see, the Cobb hat might make it tough to clean the system, though.
Good point.
Ooh, that is a good point. If the system is designed so that you pop the barrel off in order to clean it, the Cobb hat would make that challenging. That's true. I don't have an answer for that one. But if the whole, so for example, Peter's Minnie Mouse that's up inside of the Love Shack, that's enough of a gap that I actually think about maybe we'll take the Minnie Mouse out and put something else in there. But with the Cobb hat, I think we could end up with a successful system. And so I kind of feel like this is, you know, it might make it more challenging to clean. It is true. But we also don't have to build a whole new rocket mass heater either. So I think it's been an experiment that is reaching success. It's the only 4-inch system we still have. And it's the only one that has a metal core. And I'm a very... What?
No. Only part of the feed tube is metal. The rest is heat-resistant concrete.
So I think that the wood feed is definitely steel.
Yeah. The top part of it.
And I think that the burn tunnel is also steel.
Nope. Not at all.
Okay. All right. Not at all. All right. I know that the riser is vermiculite board.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, but you're saying that the burn tunnel is a type of refractory cement? Huh.
Yep.
Okay. I guess I haven't dug into it enough.
Where all the burning takes place is refractory cement.
Okay. All right.
And
good.
Everything that's on the level of the burn tunnel, so part of the riser and part of the feed tube, is refractory.
So I'm going to say, so there's a question, do you think 4-inch work for a 6-inch system? I got to say that we're not going to do any more 4-inch systems here.
No.
That's my opinion. And, you know, it's possible to get a 4-inch system to work well. But it is hard. It's challenging. And then on top of that, if nothing else, like a 4-inch J-tube, kind of like what we're talking about up at the Love Shack, when the time comes to get the ash out, my hand does not fit down. And I've got, of course, kind of giant hands, but my hand doesn't fit down the wood feed to get the ash out. So there's ways to do it, but it's like it's you got to have something there to get that ash out. Yes, Peter?
Comment. Is there any ash in the wood feed?
I would imagine so. Yeah, look at there's Stephen. He's saying
Is there in the burp tunnel, Stephen? Oh, is you're muted.
He's either muted or his microphone is wonky. He is not muted. It's his microphone.
Okay. Said I can't understand it.
Peter, we can't hear you.
It's just a thin layer. That's what I understand. A thin layer of ash there. Okay, you understand. The whole idea of that optimized J-tube was not to plug it with ashes. In a normal J-tube, it's plugged by ashes at the back, at the riser end. But because there is a sort of ski ramp going up there, it's going in the direction of where the gases go, and only a small patch of ash will stay at the bottom of the ramp, just a bit, and that's it. I think that's the bit you mentioned, Stephen.
So there's a question here about a 4-inch exhaust for a 6-inch system. I want you to go watch the movie Free Heat. I think it's at freeheat.info. It's possible that Andreas can put a link up. But the thing is we tried that, and it didn't do well. And so now we don't do a 4-inch exhaust on anything. The laminar flow is too much. You got a 6-inch is the smallest you can do. You could possibly do a 5-inch exhaust on a 6-inch system, if you're doing the kiss the barrel thing, but we just went straight for 6. But if you look at that movie, the Free Heat movie, we tested a lot of different things trying to use 4-inch exhaust. And in the end, we're just dropping all 4-inch exhaust. All right, here's something that says, what would you think about 3D printing with clay fiber, an over-engineered organic alien Dyson-shaped stove, like some kind of turbojet tornado thing, but made out of natural materials only? I don't think it's going to work. I don't think it's going to work. I mean, the rocket mass heater stuff works because of the materials that we use next to the fire can handle temperatures over 2,000 degrees. But the material, it's not the same. We use specialized materials for that. So I'm going to let it go. Question for Peter. You have built rocket mass heaters in the Netherlands, ?
Yeah, I did.
Can excursions be organized to see them?
You can see this one behind me. and there is another one experiment in the workshop behind that wall here. But actually, I didn't do much of building. actually I do a lot of experiments. And I break them down and use the materials again so they are not here anymore. So at home I have two rocket mass heaters, one here and one there. That's it.
This next question is the exhaust a continuous metal pipe? Yes. I am wondering how far cold conducts down the exhaust when the fire is out and what effect that has on airflow. That is an excellent question. Yep. And I know that for the Fisher-Price house, we have an 8-inch exhaust, and there have been times when it was cold enough outside that we were seeing frost in the house on that duct, on that stovepipe, which is part of why I think that if we shrink it down to 6 inches, that the cold conduction from the outside to the inside is going to be reduced. And so that's another reason to shrink the size of the vertical exhaust. All right. Do we have some more? Okay, here's another one. With rocket mass heaters, has anyone actually tried to heat their house with trash in the spirit of permaculture produced no waste? So, yeah, I tell a story frequently where Ianto Evans heated his home with nothing but junk mail for an entire winter. And so, yes. Yes, it can be done. Now, here, we tend to use cardboard boxes. We get a lot of stuff shipped here. And I know that the problem is that you get bored burning cardboard boxes. Look, there's Steven. He's going to do it now. Quick demonstration. But we have stuff that arrives here in cardboard boxes, which we use to heat our spaces. But I confess that we get quickly bored of sitting there feeding cardboard in. It's easier to put some wood in so you can walk away for 20, 30 minutes. Ever consider testing a Tesla valve for the chimney? No. Oh, maybe Peter has.
No. But no. I know what a Tesla valve is. Sorry, too much friction.
Well, and then it's like, you know, we're back to that whole thing of like, why not just have a cork, you know? And it's like, and then the whole problem we have with the cork. So
it is very complicated to build that right, the Tesla valve, and actually we are not up to making it more complicated. We are up to less complicated, right?
That is true. That is true. So, love the lives, keep doing them. We'll see what we can do. This does seem to be working out pretty good. Okay, do we have any more questions at this time, or is it probably time to wrap up? I know my bladder is saying that we are at the end of this event. So, anybody else got anything else to add?
Just as a beginner question, instead of people sitting on that bench in the library, it looks like there's a wood storage unit on top of it.
Yeah, we've been.
So you're harvesting that heat to dry your wood?
Well, I think the firewood we've been putting on it is already pretty dry, but sure, yeah, it's drying it to some degree, a little bit more. I mean, if it gets drier, it'll burn better, but I don't. If any of the wood was a little green, it would probably dry it out pretty quick. But I don't know. It's just been a nice wood rack, nice place to keep it over the mass. Let's see.
And Stephen, hasn't there been like a clothes drying rack there as well at times?
Over the one in the Fisher-Price house, there's a clothes drying rack.
Okay, but I thought, okay, maybe
on a pulley. And then on the one in the solarium, there's, yeah, see, okay. Towards the solarium, we have one on a pulley. And so you put on the clothes drying rack, and then you pull up. There's two clothes drying racks, so Stephen's doing two. There's two, in there mirror that rocket mass heater in the solarium.
So it's multifunction. It both heats, it dries your clothes, and subsequently it humidifies the air as well.
That's true. So let's see. Our furnace is out negative five last night, and the part is $550. Is there a sane way to get a rocket mass heater going quick and easy? And I just want to say that somehow I am talking to people who are designing shippable cores for sale. And I believe that one of these shippable cores will be available in the United States. It's an 8-inch shippable core. It'll be available in the United States soon. You can buy a Liberator, which is a 4-inch shippable core. The Liberator's wood feet is small, so it's kind of like it works well in a home where you're going to keep your home warm. But we tried using the Liberator in the wood shop, and people were frustrated because you would put as much fire in it as you can for 4 hours, and it didn't warm the space up enough. And so that's why we have that new batch box rocket mass heater in there. Oh, and I'm going to say a thing that will make Peter happy, because Peter was very angry with me when I recorded a podcast about batch box. Yeah. I was very sour on Batchbox, and he became very angry with me for a long time. But I want to make it perfectly clear. One of the things I said in there, and I stand by, is if you're going to build a rocket mass heater, your first rocket mass heater should be a J-tube. Don't take on a Batchbox for your first build. A batch box build is going to be about 3 times more sophisticated. I'm going to add the words I think, and then Peter can say a different number later. But I think it's about, and I think to learn rocket mass heater stuff, learn with a J-tube. And when you've built 3 J-tube rocket mass heaters, I think then you're ready to build your first batch box. I think one of the big flaws I see with batch box is too many people going for batch box in their first build. Like, oh yeah, other people should build 3 first, but not me. I'm brilliant and smart, and so I'm going to start with batch box. And then they end up with a freak show of flaming death instead of a rocket mass heater, and they feel like all rocket mass heaters suck, and that makes me sad. I do want to say, for almost all homes, a J-tube is probably best. And if you're talking about a shop or a cabin, and a cabin you allow to go stone cold, and now you got to heat it up fast, a J-tube just is going to be so slow. It's going to take a long, long time to get that, because you're going to start off stone cold, and then you're going to be like, I want it to be 70 degrees in here right away. Fahrenheit, I got to say. Fahrenheit, because Peter's here. But and it's like, I want to be comfortable right away. I don't want to wait 6 hours. And so a batch box is going to use 4.3 times more wood. And so it's going to warm everything up 4.3 times faster. And So here you can see inside of a shop, we're using the triple barrel design, which Peter was the first one to teach me that. We're using a triple barrel design. So instead of there being a mass, there's 3 barrels to extract the heat quickly, and there's no mass. And so it'll heat a shop much faster. And then when you leave the shop and the fire goes out, the tools don't care that it's getting cold suddenly. You know, the mass is good for when there's going to be people in the house sleeping, and they want to stay warm through the night. So a cabin is still going to be a rocket mass heater, but a batch box would be wise for a cabin, because you could get the cabin temperature up 4.3 times faster than you can with a J-tube. And then because there's a mass, you can maintain the temperature in the cabin over the time that you're in the cabin. So, all right, Peter, I'm saying that a batch box will heat a space 4.3 times faster, but the trade-off is it is a 3 times more sophisticated build.
Yep.
Now, you're going to have different numbers than me, probably. What would be your number choices?
It depends on. One of the things are a batch box can run without a door. Nobody seems to know that, but I've built a couple of open systems, and the ones that I measured, two or three, the overall efficiency was a bit lower, let's say 3 or 5%. That was it. It ran beautifully without a door. But you have to stay in the neighborhood because a fire could fall out. You can't close it up for the night or something like that. So that's why I was fond of the door. What do you call this door?
Oh, this door is the plug door, plug style door. Oh, I love it. It makes the build so much simpler.
Yep.
And, you just need a place to be able to park the door when you move it off of the hole.
Yeah.
But your idea of a batch box rocket mass heater without a door and you have a successful design, you telling me that publicly in this format gives me a stomachache. And the reason is that I've heard of people more than once, like more than, I think, 3 times, where people have been someplace where somebody started to build a batch box style rocket mass heater, but they didn't think about the door. And so they hadn't built a door yet. And then they left. And then somebody said, that there is a rocket mass heater. And then somebody would try to put a fire in it, and they haven't finished building it yet. And then the smoke pours out the front of it, and they're like, all rocket mass heaters suck because smoke pours out the front of them.
Yep.
And it's like, so I keep ending up having to fight on that front. Like, that is it's like trying to drive a car that doesn't have a steering wheel. All cars suck. They just go into the ditch. This is stupid. All cars are stupid.
Yes.
So you're just trying to drive one that doesn't have a steering wheel. Well, somebody told me it was a car. I got in. I made it go. So why did it go into the ditch? This is dumb. And it's like, I just kind of feel like when people get excited about batch box and then they make a freak show of flaming death instead, whether it's because they didn't finish the job or they innovated before knowing how to innovate.
Well, an open fire is a freak show.
Yes.
That's a freak show.
So
and now we have, I think 4 or 5 open batch boxes, but they are specifically built for that purpose. To be able to run without a door. So it's not for in a house.
No,
it's
I get
for,
it.
For outside on the terrace or something.
I get it. I understand. Yeah. Fascinating, interesting. But I can't help but think that I'm going to get, well, I'm rocket mass heaters as a whole are going to be poisoned by this lovely thing that you made.
Right.
Because,
well, it's sort of like, don't try this at home, kids.
Right.
I asked for this picture to come back up because this is a batch box, right? This is the batch box with the 3 barrels being built.
Yeah.
Look how complicated that is. Oh, my God. You need a brick saw. You need to have all these angles right. you are cutting all of these bricks. My understanding, I am not an expert, I'm the newbie here, but my understanding is you can build a J2 batch box and you're not cutting a lot of bricks. And when you do, they're not at angles like this.
A J2 batch box doesn't exist.
I said that wrong. You can build a J-tube rocket mass heater without doing a lot of brick cutting. Am I right?
Yeah, yeah. That is true.
Which is why Paul says build 3 J-tubes before you go mucking around with the, you know. This is it's your first woodworking project and you're going to, you know, just make something super complicated. Yeah.
You should build a wood box before you build a chest of drawers.
Actually, I started with something entirely else, but at the time it looked like a full-size masonry heater as used in Finland. And right. I knew what brick cutting was and so on. So for me, this is fairly easy. But it's for me, not for everybody. That's right.
Peter's a trained professional, folks.
Yeah.
Don't try this at home.
Yeah, sort of.
So I want to, so I'm going on record as stating that batch box, and in fact, Peter, when you were here and you built that batch box, I think I couldn't shut up about how this changes everything and this is going to be everybody's going to do batch box from here on out. It is the best. And it was because of people behaving poorly, and then bashing all rocket mass heaters because they were thinking that this unfinished rocket mass heater, they were trying to use it as if it was finished, and they were saying, this is terrible. So all rocket mass heaters suck. This thing that I believe was setting back rocket mass heaters, that's where I became very, very frustrated with batch box. But I will gladly state that for a shop or a garage or a cabin, I mean, there's all kinds of reasons for having a batch box is definitely superior to a J-tube. And in that podcast that you were so upset about, I said there is no way for a batch box to ever be as efficient as a J-tube. And I have to withdraw that. I have to say that there is a way for a batch box to be even more efficient than a J-tube. And it has to do with the fact that you have to design the mass, the extraction, to extract, as you mentioned at the beginning of this recording, to extract much, much more. But you can have if you can get your exhaust temperatures down to like 140, which is what we kind of shoot for with a J-tube, then you have effectively become more efficient than the J-tube. But there would have to be a lot more extraction happening. The extraction system would have to be more substantial in order for that to happen. So. Yep. There, have I said the thing? So erase whatever awfulness from my past.
you're right. A batch box could be more efficient, could be more powerful, and so on. But it's also more complicated. It's a trade-off. That's all there is to say about it.
Yeah. Which a rocket mass heater, in general, compared to a conventional wood stove, it's kind of the same story. And the Achilles heel of a rocket mass heater, as much as there's people that say all these negative things about rocket mass heaters that are not true, the one thing that is true, they don't seem to even touch that. And that is the whole thing about the cold plug. With all this efficiency, the trade-off is the cold plug. And having ways to mitigate a cold plug. And then the other thing is that if you're in a cabin or if you're in a wood shop or something like that, an outdoor sauna, then you're going to have a cold plug every time you start it. which is a bit of a problem. But if you can have ways of mitigating the cold plug, you can get around that. And with a conventional wood stove, you don't really have the cold. Well, you can still have the cold plug problem, but generally you don't, because the fire is built right under the chimney. And so it's like, but with all this efficiency, the trade-off is the cold plug. So, all right. Anybody got anything else to add to this recording thingamabob? Have we replied to all the questions that came through? I haven't seen any more pop up on my screen here, so I'm guessing we're kind of done with that. So, I'm going to say it. I'm going to do it. If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about rocket mass heaters, homesteading, and permaculture.
All the time.
All the time. So long, farewell.
Have you ever wondered whether a particular book was really good or just so-so, and if you could trust the reviews online? When it comes to books related to permaculture, Permies has a large list of reviews for over 100 books. Perhaps you're considering a book for yourself or a friend, or you're just curious about what's out there. Stop by permies.com/book and take a look at the book review grid and read some honest reviews, and hopefully you'll find the next book to add to your collection.